My family was served an entree nearly 5 decades ago at a Sichuan restaurant that was said to be one of the 7 best in the world. That we remember that dish as if it were yesterday leads us to ask, what makes the foods of Sichuan so memorable?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1208th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Sydney who are tuned in to the Food Chain Podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, being a Montana boy, I was raised on meat and potatoes with a side of greens, or something. To spice things up, we did have salt and pepper and some tins of McCormick spices, but that was about the extent of it. I did have a desire to see what was going on over the horizon, though, and somehow found myself studying Chinese language and literature at the University of California, Santa Cruz. My Chinese professor was a tall, very elegant woman, a refugee from Chairman Mao's great cultural revolution by the name of Qingyi Doherty. Qingyi introduced our class to a rather nondescript restaurant in downtown Santa Cruz called the New Riverside. Though it's owned by a big Chinese corporation, she said, it's one of the top 7 Sichuan Chinese restaurants in the world. When my very well-traveled in-laws came to town for a visit, I thought I would show them how worldly I had become, and so invited them to dinner at the New Riverside. I asked the manager of the restaurant, who by then I had become pretty good friends with, to have the chef prepare something very memorable. When the entree arrived, it left the entire family speechless. There before us, on a huge platter, was a whole sea bass smothered in hot bean sauce. Decades later, that whole fish in hot bean sauce still comes up during the table talk of our family get-togethers. That a single dish could linger there in the family's memory for decades leads us to ask, what makes the foods of Sichuan so memorable? To find an answer, we head east to the Big Apple for a conversation with Fuchsia Dunlop, who is the author of The Food of Sichuan, which was known as the Land of Plenty. Fuchsia, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hello.
So, before we take one more step, I have a challenge for you. I have before me your 500-page book in which you describe in loving detail some of the foods of Sichuan. And I had to order a second one from your publisher because I ate the first one. And I advise you folks out there who are thinking about getting the Food of Sichuan, you better order 2 because you'll probably eat the first one like I did. So my challenge to you, Fuchsia, is that I would like you to select a dish from your vocabulary, as it were, and a dish that would linger in our memory for a long, long time. And then at the end of the show, I'll ask you to prepare that dish for us and cook it. Is that a reasonable challenge for you?
I can do my best.
That's all we can ask. I'll take that. So let's go to the Food of Sichuan, which was known as the Land of Plenty, and ask, why did you change its name?
Well, because it's not just a sort of rehash of an old book. I retested all the recipes. There are 70 entirely new recipes, and I kind of rewrote substantial sections of it. So I wanted to show that it's a sort of a new take on the book rather than just a reprint.
Good. And how did Fuchsia Dunlop become so taken with China that you became Fuchsia Dunlop, the author of Food of Sichuan?
So I first went to China in the early 90s and was completely fascinated with the country. And in 1993, I first visited the Sichuanese capital, Chengdu. And like you, I had a meal that impressed itself on my memory and my spirit, and which I never forgot. And I, on that trip, I sort of decided that I wanted to go back and live in this city, in this province of China, Sichuan Province. And a year later, I managed to win a British Council scholarship to study for a year in China. And I chose the Sichuanese capital, Chengdu. And while I was there, I got totally distracted from my studies and ended up spending most of my spare time researching the food and studying in the kitchens of little local restaurants, and ended up enrolling at this famous cooking school.
And it became your life.
Yes, yes. And I think in retrospect, it looks as though it was all sort of a plan and a great strategy, but it really wasn't. It was bit by bit doing something that seemed like fun at the time, like enrolling in the cooking school. And yes, it has taken over my life for the last now about 25 years.
And when you look back, what was it about Sichuan food? It was very little known. Few people knew about it way back when. When there was this magic restaurant in Santa Cruz, California, that was in a big cinder block building, and you wouldn't even know it was a restaurant, but it was, and it was a very famous one to the cognoscenti, but a mystery to anybody in town. And yet now, Sichuan Chinese food has become extremely popular. What do you think gave rise to its popularity?
Well, I think it's always been one of China's most exciting cuisines, because the thing about Sichuanese cuisine is the diversity of flavors. So everyone thinks that it's all about fire and spice, and it's certainly a spicy cuisine, but it's really about having this extraordinary roller coaster ride of tastes. So in Sichuan, they say yi cai yi ge, bai cai bai wei, which means each dish has its own style, and 100 dishes have 100 different flavors. So at a really good Sichuanese meal, you don't just have all really hot dishes, but you have some which are hot and sweet, some which are hot and numbing, some which are sour and hot, and some which are very mild and gentle on the palate. And so I think it's a very exciting cuisine. And what has happened really is that in America, American Chinese cuisine was created by Cantonese immigrants, so from a completely different region, which is a world away in terms of the palate. And Cantonese food is more sort of gentle flavors and more about the original tastes of ingredients and so on. And for a long time, you know, Chinatowns in the United States were dominated by Cantonese people. But since the opening up of China in the 1990s, all kinds of different Chinese people from different parts of the country have been moving to the United States to study, to live, to do business. And they want to eat the most popular cuisine in China at the moment, mm-hmm. which is the Sichuanese. So instead of having a Chinese food in America, which was kind of partly created to satisfy Western palates, you've got Chinese food on Chinese terms, and the Sichuanese is just really hot for the last sort of couple of decades.
Right. And so Canton, of course, is coastal. Sichuan is different. It's landlocked. It's way in the south-central part of China.
Yeah, southwest China. It's kind of, if you go any further west, you're on the Tibetan Plateau.
There you go. Describe a little bit about the province. What did it look like? What did it feel like to hike around Sichuan?
Oh, well, if you look at a map of China, Sichuan is right in the heart of the country, and it's ringed by mountains, which is one of the reasons that it has a very distinctive local culture. And it's a very lush agricultural province. And that's why its sort of name since antiquity was Tianfu Zhiguo, land of plenty, because of this wonderful climate and fertile soil and a great abundance of produce all year round. So that's one of the things. If you travel around Sichuan, particularly southern Sichuan, it's so green. You get these beautiful green rice paddies and bamboo forests, and everything is just teeming with life. So that's the province agriculturally. And of course, they have a very spicy cuisine, and the people of Sichuan are said to be a little bit spicy themselves.
So you have a wonderful description of a country cafe, I think it was, when everybody was sitting around eating this extremely hot food, and they're all red.
It's a wonderful red in the face.
Red in the face. It was a wonderful image. Hot food, and they were very gregarious and very happy and very bubbly and very red. I thought.
Yeah, I mean that's one thing that you know. I'm not the only foreigner to have gone to Sichuan and fallen in love with it. It's a very charming place. Particularly the capital, Chengdu, which was in this sort of in the agricultural basin. And historically, people had a reputation for having a sort of pleasure-loving, idle life and spending all their time sitting in tea houses and playing mahjong and eating. And Sichuan dialect is this gorgeous, honeyed, relaxed, it's just a gorgeous sound. Mm-hmm. And so Sichuan is just a very laid-back and hilarious and welcoming place. And that's one thing the Sichuanese say about themselves. They're very baorong, very inclusive, very open to outsiders.
Yeah. And then with respect to the agriculture, it's a year-round agriculture, correct? Fruits, spices, pickles, or pickled everything, and life is good.
Yes, and so many. I mean, I think when you think about American Chinese food, it's often about protein and some deep-fried food.
Meat and potatoes, yeah.
Yeah, and just that in Sichuan, what's really striking is all the beautiful seasonal vegetables. So bamboo shoots in winter and spring, bitter bamboo shoots at a certain period of the spring, and all these different fresh greens. And so in Sichuan, when you eat meal, often the vegetables, the healthiest part, are also the most delicious part of the meal.
And you have an interesting saying, China is the place for food, but Sichuan is the place for flavor.
Yes. 食在中国,味在四川. That's what people say, that China is the best country in the world for food. But if you're talking about the art of flavor and exciting flavors, you have to go to Sichuan.
What about why Sichuan and not the other provinces like Hebei or Henan or Hunan or wherever? Why not? What makes Sichuan so special?
Well, I would say that having traveled widely around China, you can find very delicious and interesting things to eat all over the country. Mm-hmm. And there are many other regional cuisines which are delicious and interesting. But the thing about Sichuan is that it's so diverse and it's so stimulating. So a good Chinese meal is always a balance of different flavors. But in Sichuan, you get these electrifying highs with make your lip tingle and make you go red with heat.
Red with heat and talk a lot and have a lot of fun.
Yes. And then, but also gentle sweet and sours, and then wonderful. The Sichuanese are really masters of the art of combining flavors. They call them fuhewei, sort of a complex, many layered flavors, like fish fragrant flavor, yuxiangwei, which is made with pickled chilies, which are not that hot, but have this lovely fruity flavor and heat, with ginger, garlic, scallion, and a bit of sweet and sour. So even when you talk about spicy food, there's a huge range of different kinds of spicy tastes. And I think that, people these days in big cities, particularly, we're spoiled with the range of tastes available to us.
Okay.
And Sichuanese food, it just goes on being exciting, even when competing with all these other cuisines.
Okay, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What, and we're eating Sichuan today with Fuchsia Dunlop, and you do stay tuned. We will be right back.
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio.
I don't know why it does that, but it does. Okay, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program, Michael Olson. We are back with Chinese cooking with Fuchsia Dunlop. You don't sound very Chinese, Fuchsia Dunlop.
Not in the least. I have no Chinese blood at all.
Now, what was it like for you wandering around Sichuan province when you first went over there? You must have been probably one of the first wandering around over there, Westerner.
Well, certainly. Yeah, in the 1990s, there were very few foreigners in China. So even in Sichuan, in Chengdu, a provincial capital, there were only a couple of hundred foreigners. So we had great novelty value for local people, many of whom just hadn't met foreigners before. And so everything we did attracted a lot of attention. You know, I would go out and buy a bus ticket and a crowd would gather to see what was going on. So it was quite strange being the center of attention.
Kind of like a rock star, right?
Yes, exactly. And a lot of us were, you know, in advertisements on television and in newspapers, and we were invited to give speeches just because we were foreign and we had this sort of novelty value. But people were also very welcoming. And I think also it was a very exciting period to be in China as a foreigner because the country had been so closed and suddenly it was opening up and all these things that had not been possible were becoming possible. Like, for example, being a foreigner going to study at a chef school.
There you are. And I bet they loved you, though.
Yeah, people, I had very, very good experiences. People were very welcoming. And yeah, I mean, I was lucky to be able to study in the kitchens of many local restaurants and so on.
How did the chefs react to you, the people who had been there cooking forever and had learned these incredible techniques? 56 different types of cooking methods?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it's a very sophisticated cuisine. And I think that when I...
So one of the things, you know, when we hear about Sichuan cuisine, we think of, well, spices. But you're talking about 56 different ways of cooking food.
Yes. I mean, people often think, when they think of Chinese food, they think about stir frying. As being the Chinese cooking method, but actually there are many different methods. So steaming is extremely important, braising and stewing, boiling, and then lots of different kinds of stir-frying, like baochao, which means literally means to explode stir-fry, which means to cut food up small and fry it at a very fierce heat very quickly. And there's another word, liu, which means to first you cut your ingredient and cook it first in oil or in water and then add it to a separately prepared sauce. So you can see that took me a whole sentence to explain, but there's one word for that in Sichuanese.
Which is Chinese makes sense, but in English does not make much sense. And you talk about there being five different flavors instead of four.
Yeah, well, traditionally, the Chinese have five directions, five elements, and a sort of liking for fives in general.
Is that because of their tuned into Fibonacci numbers?
That I don't know. yeah, so they have sweet, sour, salty, bitter, but they also have a word called xin, which means pungent or spicy.
Mm-hmm. Would that be similar to umami?
No, umami is yet another flavor, but not one of the classic fives. And people in China, in the Chinese kitchen, talk all the time about umami, about, you know, using ingredients to bring out umami flavors.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I found interesting is the skill in dispelling bad odors.
Yeah. So in Chinese terms, sort of particularly meat and poultry and fish ingredients, they have a slightly unsavory aspect to their flavors, which you have to treat in the kitchen. So usually called xingwei, fishy taste, although there are some other terms as well. So when you're cooking something like a fish or a piece of meat, you have to start by dispelling these so-called xingwei, fishy tastes. And you might do that by blanching first, by marinating in ginger and spring onion, or by adding a little Shaoxing wine. And it kind of purifies the flavor, and it allows the natural xianwei, umami flavor of these ingredients to shine.
Wow. A definite skill. A practice skill in that one, I would suspect.
Yeah, and it does, and it really does work. I mean, if you try comparing the flavors, for example, of a stock made with chicken and pork bones, for example, with and without a little bit of ginger and spring onion to take away the xingwei, it's much better taste with the ginger and spring onion.
Mm-hmm. And taste becomes something that you really... How long did it take you to really tune your taste into the different kinds of flavors? Because there's so many of them.
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose that it was a question of, you know, when I was at the chef school, we learnt them like the French canon of sauces. We learnt this canon of classic flavour combinations, like the fish fragrant flavour that I mentioned before, and mala, numbing and hot, the most famous Sichuanese flavour. And so I learnt them, but it was also just through tasting many different dishes.
And then you could try to identify what kind of taste it was then.
Yes, and then recreate it in the kitchen.
So when you were sitting around at a table with somebody else who was studying cooking, did that become a big topic of discussion? What kind of flavor is this?
Yeah, well, I mean, I spent a lot of time, and I still do in China, with chefs and with people, you know, food writers and so on. And Chinese people in general are very, very discerning about what they eat and will discuss in great detail. Not just flavor, actually, but also texture, mouthfeel, kogan, which is equally important in Chinese gastronomy.
Not unlike some wine aficionados doing a wine tasting then.
Yes, yes, very similar.
Hmm. You talk about hua hua being the essence of Chinese cooking. Fire and waiting.
Hua ho, yes.
Hua ho. Would you describe that one? Ho,
yeah,
ho.
So, yeah, huo ho. So huo is the first character, is fire, and ho is time,
hua,
or waiting.
Ho. Okay.
So huo, yeah.
Got it.
So, yeah, huo ho is the most difficult skill to master in the Chinese kitchen. And what it is the command of the sort of strength of the heat in your wok or in your pan. And so, for example, when you're doing a stir fry, you might begin by frying some aromatics in oil, like garlic and ginger. And huo ho is all about knowing the sort of temperature of the oil, so knowing when to put in your garlic and ginger, letting them sizzle, and sort of knowing when the oil is hot enough to bring out their wonderful fragrances, but not so hot that it'll burn them. And so this is like the sixth sense of a Chinese chef, because if you think about stir frying, it's so fast. And if you watch, particularly in a professional kitchen, a chef who's doing dish after dish with an almost volcanic heat of the stove, and there's no margin for error, you need to know when something is ready, you know, a few seconds over or a few seconds under, and it'll either be, you know, too raw or it'll be overcooked. And so this, you know, when I meet a stir fry master chef, I admire so much this acute sensitivity to heat.
So they're probably moving the wok on and off the heat quite a bit then, if they're doing a lot of dishes.
Yes, yes. And that's also one way that you control the heat, is that if the fire is very hot and you think it's at risk of overheating, you can actually hold your wok away for a few seconds and keep stir frying away from the mouth of the fire.
And so learning the correct amount of hua, hua, ha, what did I say it again?
Hua ho.
Okay, hua ho. So learning the correct amount of heat is the essence then of actually being the chef then, is knowing how hot to get it.
Yes, well, I mean, I think particularly with stir frying, but with any kind of cooking, you just want to make sure that your ingredients are done just right. And that's what huo ho is about. But with stir frying, it becomes a very difficult skill because of the speed at which the dish is prepared. So you just have to sort of develop an awareness, you know, with your nose to smell when the garlic is ready, or when, you know, when the ingredient is cooked.
And smell is a big part of that?
Hugely. So there's a word in Chinese that's often used, which is qiao xiang, which means to stir fry fragrant. So that is exactly when, maybe another example, some chili bean paste. So you sizzle it in oil until you've woken up all its wonderful flavors and aromas. And it's really your nose that will tell you when you've got that moment when the oil is perfumed with the chili bean paste.
So it would seem to me the essence of Sichuan cooking means really being there on top of the stove.
Well, except that, you know, another great thing about Sichuanese cuisine is they have fabulous cold dishes, cold appetizers. So there are all kinds of ways, for example, of dressing cold chicken meat. So you can just poach a chicken and shred the meat and then concoct a dressing. So not just with, you know, oil and vinegar and mustard, but with chili oil and sesame oil and Chinese vinegar and sugar and maybe a bit of ground roasted Sichuan pepper. And you can create these amazing flavor combinations without actually cooking at all.
Well, I thought it would be with 5,000 different Sichuan dishes. 5,000?
That's what they say.
I think we live on burgers and french fries, and 5,000 different dishes in Sichuan cuisine. So I thought, you know, maybe we could just go through some of them to kind of get a good idea of not only agriculture but the food that comes from that agriculture. So I thought maybe we'd just go through a few of them and start with pork. Pork is a big part of the Chinese diet, is it not?
Yes, well, when people in Chinese say rou, which is the word for meat, they mean rou. Pork, unless otherwise specified.
And then
they
could say
meat.
Nu rou.
Yeah, which means beef. Okay. Yes.
I got something right.
Yeah, so although there are, I mean, Chinese Muslims obviously don't eat any pork at all, but most other people, pork is the main meat.
Okay.
And it's prized for its very sort of delicate, sweet flavor and its wonderful fat. And it's used in all kinds of dishes, and sometimes it's the main ingredient. So you have chunks of meat, for example, red braised with soy sauce and rice wine and sugar. Or it can be a paleo accompanying ingredient. So you might stir fry slivers of pork with a whole wok full of vegetables, for example.
One dish you mentioned is you called the fire exploded kidney flowers.
Yes, yes. Oh, that's an amazing dish. So the Chinese experts in, you know, what you might call nose to tail eating, so eating every part of the
what do you mean by
beast.
That?
So eating every part of the animal. So, for example, with a pig, it's not just the lean meat. It's not just the fat meat. It's everything from the tail to the nose of the pig.
Nothing goes to waste.
Nothing goes to waste. And the dish you just mentioned, so huobao yaohua, fire exploded kidney flowers. So huobao is the cooking method, bao that I already mentioned, fast explosive stir frying. And kidney flowers, now that's about knife work. So you take a pig's kidney, which is a kind of clunky, not very attractive ingredient, but you cut it into sort of crisscross pattern, like you sometimes get squid in Chinese restaurants mm-hmm. cut this way. So you cut the kidney into little pieces, and when you stir fry them explosively, very high heat, they curl up and become very frilly and dainty and delicate. And so
turn into flowers.
Yes, like flowers. And this is so delicious. And also, you know, I think I've often been with Western friends in China who don't think that a pig's kidney sounds like a very appetizing ingredient. And when they taste this dish, they just think it's beautiful, delicious.
Wow. Beef. Now, I don't see Sichuan as being cattle country.
No, not at all. And people traditionally didn't eat much beef at all, except there's one exception, really, which is Zigong, which is this town in the south of Sichuan, which has had a salt industry for more than 2,000 years. So that's mining salt from these vats of brine deep in the earth and then simmering it to get your salt. And they used to use oxen to turn the machinery to draw the brine from the depths of the earth. And so these oxen would then be used when they died in cooking. So Zigong has some quite interesting beef dishes.
Scalded kidneys with fresh chili.
Oh, that's another beautiful dish. and that's, again, a very delicate, dainty dish made with pig's kidneys. So here they're sliced very, very thin and just scalded in boiling water. So again, as with the fire exploding, a kidney, if it's overcooked, it becomes sort of dry and leathery. So this is again about ho-ho, the control of heat. So with ingredients like that, you have to cook them really fast, which means you have to cut them really thin or really frilly so the oil or water can get in. So this kidney dish, the kidneys are sliced and then covered in a delicious flavoring oil. And that's another revelation if you've never eaten pig's kidney before.
Again, nose to tail, right?
Exactly.
Nothing goes to waste. Well,
and it's so imaginative. So it's always about thinking what this ingredient or this part of the animal, what it's like, what are its qualities, what are its deficiencies, and then using kitchen technique to bring out the qualities and to minimize the deficiencies. And so there is this immense thought and technique that goes into Chinese and Sichuanese cooking.
Was that the essence of what you learned in cooking school?
Yes, I mean, not just in cooking school, but also in the years afterwards studying kitchens. Mm-hmm. It is this approach to just considering your ingredient and what you can do with it, and then using this whole range of different techniques and concepts to turn it into something delicious.
Kind of like creative writing.
Yes. Yeah, it's very creative.
Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Today, we're traveling the province of Sichuan in central China, central west China, with Fuxia Dunlop, who wrote The Food of Sichuan, which originally came out as Land of Plenty. Both titles work pretty well. It's an incredibly beautiful book. The first one they sent me, I ate and had to get another one. And if you order one, you probably have to get another one, too. So order two. We will be right back.
So much to say, so little time to say it. On the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, some like it hot. And if you travel around Sichuan province in China, you better like it hot, because they make it hot there. And that's the subject of our conversation today, food. And we're talking with Fuxia Dunlop, who's the author of The Food of Sichuan. And we're talking about various dishes. So let's pick up chicken. Chicken, they're everywhere. Everywhere you look all around the world. So I suspect they're in Sichuan as well.
Yes, yes. I mean, chicken in the past in China and in Sichuan used to be a special occasion dish, not something for everyday eating at all.
But it is now.
Yes, yes.
Well, you have
delicious chicken dishes too.
You have a dish in here that really got my attention. It was a stir-fried chicken hodgepodge. A hodgepodge?
Well, yeah, that's using all the different bits of chicken offal, so the hearts and livers, and stir-frying them very quickly with some aromatics and vegetables.
Mm-hmm. And the taste?
Oh, delicate and savory with a little bit of heat, bit of ginger and garlic. That's another surprisingly delicious dish. And the name in Chinese is Chao Ji Zha, and Zha means sort of random miscellany assortment, which is why I translated it as hodgepodge.
There you go. Well, of course, fish, when we think of coastal Chinese and Cantonese cooking, fish is very big. But where do they get fish when you're in landlocked Sichuan?
Well, actually, Sichuan has a lot of freshwater fish, including rock carp and the long snout catfish. So people do eat a fair amount of fish, and they often, and also eels, freshwater eels, which are fantastic, cooked with lots of chili and Sichuan pepper.
Is there anything that's not cooked with a lot of chili and Sichuan pepper?
Yes, I mean, a good Sichuanese meal will always include mild dishes as well as spicy ones.
So you kind of travel back and forth then a little bit.
Yeah, and you have something very strong and spicy, and then you refresh your palate with a mouthful of a very light, delicate soup, or some stir-fried greens that just have a little garlic in them, or a boiled or steamed dish.
And there you go. Mmm. And of course, tofu.
Yeah, well, tofu is one of the great wonders of Chinese cuisine. So it's very nutritious. You know, it has a lot of protein. So for vegetarians, it's useful. But in China, it's not only vegetarians who eat tofu. It's a normal everyday food. And it's quite often actually cooked with meat. And I think sometimes Westerners think that it's food only for vegetarians, or that it's rather boring. But with Sichuanese flavorings, tofu can become a very exciting ingredient. And dish that exemplifies that, illustrates that more than, you know, Mapo tofu, pockmarked old woman's tofu, which is named after a real late 19th century restaurateur in Chengdu. And that in that dish, this tender white tofu is cooked with Sichuan chili bean paste and usually a bit of minced beef, and it's finished with a sprinkling of ground roasted Sichuan pepper. And that dish, in my experience, converts anybody who thought tofu was boring into a tofu lover.
Does the tofu pick up the taste of the oils and the spices and everything?
Absolutely. It's a phenomenal dish. One of the world's great dishes, I believe.
Well, you know, how do Chinese do tofu differently than we do tofu here?
Well, I suppose that the first thing is that in China there are so many different kinds of tofu. So in the West, you normally just get the regular white blocks of tofu. You can also get silken tofu. But in China, you can get tofu piece, skins made of tofu. You can get smoked tofu. You can get tofu that is cooked in spices.
Kind of like jerky?
No, it's like it's firmly pressed. So it has the consistency maybe of cheese, and then it's simmered in a spiced broth. But it becomes firm. It holds its shape, so you can cut it up and then stir fry it, for example, with vegetables. So there are lots of different kinds of tofu, and some of them are plain and white, and some of them are quite strongly flavored. And also, have you ever had fermented tofu, tofu roux?
No.
Oh, this is so delicious. So this is tofu that is cut into cubes and let to go moldy, a bit like a cheese mold,
yeah,
covered in this fluffy white mold. And then it's cured with salt or put in brine. And after a period of, you know, a couple of months, it has these wonderful umami tastes. So it's like a very strong blue cheese, something like Roquefort, that kind of intensity of flavor. And in China, people eat it as a relish with their, you know, with plain rice to xiafan, send the rice down. Sometimes they spread it on steamed buns. I like to eat it actually on toast. And you can also eat it in cooking. So you can stir fry green vegetables with a little bit of fermented tofu in it. Gives it a kind of creamy, rich umami flavor. So that's a very interesting use of tofu that I think people in the West could learn a lot more about.
Well, yeah, I would suspect so. Being a Montana boy, the stuff always frightened me. But the way you describe it, I think I would try it.
Yeah.
Let's try some rice. Eight Treasure Black Rice Porridge. And of course, rice is a staple, is it not?
Yes, yes. In the south of China, including Sichuan, it's the main staple food. And noodles and breads are seen as supplementary to the rice at the heart of the meal. You know, in Chinese, when you say you're going to eat a meal, you say shifan, which means to eat cooked rice. That's
mm-hmm.
what it literally means.
Shifan. Bao bao. Hey, me, Cho.
Yes.
Did I get it close?
Yeah, eight treasure black rice, congee or porridge.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
What are the eight treasures?
Well, doesn't have to be exactly eight, but you cook different kinds of rice together, including the black glutinous rice, which gives your porridge a sort of lovely purple color. And then you put into it various nuts and seeds, so peanuts, lotus bulb, bits of barley, lotus seeds. So just handfuls of dried seeds and nuts. So it becomes a very nutritious and very tasty breakfast food.
It seems like anything that was living is pretty much food.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, people, Westerners, have always thought that the Chinese eat everything. And I think the Chinese do have an incredibly adventurous approach to ingredients, very resourceful. And it's partly, it's a very biodiverse country. There are a huge number of different terrains with different ingredients. But it is also this creativity and thoughtfulness.
And what about history? You know, they've been working on things for like 4,000 years.
Yeah, well, I mean, you get very, very lyrical descriptions of food from more than 2,000 years ago. And I think China has just always been a particularly food-focused country, and people have put a lot of energy and thought into eating well, and eating well has always been one of the main measures of a good life. Mm-hmm. And so it is an extraordinary cuisine.
We eat one more dish before we go to yours, and that would be the spiced oil tea with crunchy toppings.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a street snack. So that's another kind of porridge, but like a smooth porridge made with flour or other grains, cooked with spices, and then finished off with, you know, you can have it savory or sweet, but with sort of crunchy bits and seasonings. And that's another sort of nourishing breakfast on a cold day, traditionally sold by street vendors.
Tell us about street vendors. Because we have them here, but I don't think we have them here like they have them in Sichuan.
No, well, the Sichuanese capital, Chengdu, has always been famous for its street life and its xiaoche, small eats, snacks sold by street vendors. Xiaoche. And when I first lived in Chengdu in the 1990s, the city was a maze of old lanes, and there were still people going around with baskets and barrels on slung on either end of a shoulder pole, and they would carry around their stoves and their ingredients and their serving dishes, and they would set up shop and just sell snacks to passers-by. And around the early 20th century, there were just dozens of different street trades in Chengdu. So apart from food, there were knife sharpeners and people selling bamboo flutes and people mending your saucepans, but also all these snack sellers. And so there's a whole tradition of street eats, of small eats, dumplings and noodles like dandan noodles, which were traditionally sold by street vendors in tiny little portions just to take the edge off your hunger. So these days, the whole city's been redeveloped, and you see less of it than you did before, but there are still street vendors around.
And did you ever get sick eating at them?
Almost never. I can honestly say that in all the years of eating in China and eating very adventurously, I have not got sick any more than I've got sick at home in London, which is to say, once in a blue moon, you're unlucky. Mm-hmm. But
that's where I found it too. But I have been unlucky. So, Fuxia Dunlop, world famous Sichuan writer, cook, chef. Cook is something we'll remember for many decades, okay?
Okay, right. Well, my sort of desert island dish is Yuxiangqieze, a fish fragrant eggplant.
And that fish is fragrant eggplant.
Yes. So this is an absolutely brilliant example of the Sichuanese ability to turn a quite ordinary ingredient, an eggplant, into something sublime. And they do this through their unparalleled flavoring techniques. And fish fragrant, again, that combination of pickled chilies, ginger, garlic, scallion, and a bit of sweet and sour. The name, by the way, comes because it's supposed to evoke the taste of fish, because it uses all the seasonings of traditional Sichuanese fish cookery.
But it contains no fish.
No fish at all. No, that's the curiosity about it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so you take your eggplants and you deep fry them until they're golden and buttery, and then you make a sauce by sizzling pickled chilies and ginger, garlic, scallion in oil until they smell amazing.
What kind of oil?
Traditionally in Sichuan, they use rapeseed oil made from toasted rapeseeds, which is very aromatic. But in the West, you want an oil with a high smoke point, so groundnut or peanut oil, canola you can use as well, but you just want a high smoke point, so not olive oil, for example.
Right.
Yeah, and this dish, so anyway, you've made your sauce, add a bit of liquid, put the eggplants back into the sauce, and they suck up all these gorgeous flavors. And this dish is just, it's one of the best dishes I've eaten anywhere. And that's one of the reasons that I wanted to go and live in Sichuan.
Because you have eggplant once, right?
Yeah,
wow.
Life-changing dish. It really is. And I've taken it to parties where you have a sort of potluck and people just go crazy for it.
Well, we have a couple of minutes left. What else would you cook us?
Well, I might make you a gongbao chicken. Gong, and that's a kind of cliched dish in the sense that everyone's heard of gong bao or kung po chicken.
Yes.
But the Americanized version is very different from the real Chengdu version.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and the real Chengdu version, it's another dazzling example of these many-layered flavors. So it's a combination of what they call hulawei, scorched chili flavor, and lidziwei, which is lychee flavor, a delicate sweet and sour. So you've got these succulent little cubes of chicken, which are woked with ginger, garlic, and scallion, and with scorched dried chilies and Sichuan pepper. And then you add a sauce, which is a little bit sweet and sour, like the lychee. And you just get this, and then finally you add some fried or roasted peanuts. So you get the succulent chicken, the crunch of the peanuts, and all these sweet, sour, spicy, numbing, different tastes. It's glorious.
How do we get into becoming a Sichuan chef ourselves? Is it possible?
Well, read my book. Now, I would say that...
Well, yeah, that's a good place to start. But if you read the book, you might eat it. So order two of them.
Exactly. Yeah, very important to remember. But no, I would say that the thing to remember is that Sichuanese is a great cuisine. It's a very diverse and wide-ranging cuisine, and it has everything from complicated banquet delicacies to easy, everyday, you know, home dishes that you can just rustle up after a day at work. So if you're just beginning, I would start with doing some of the simpler dishes. For example, the cold dishes, like I mentioned earlier, the cold cooked chicken in a Sichuanese sauce. Extremely easy to make.
I can taste it as you talk about it.
Yeah. These, and then it'll give you a taste for the exciting flavors. And one thing I always say to people when they're just starting out, like if you want to cook a Chinese meal of any kind, don't cook all stir-fried dishes that have to be made at the last moment. So always have some, a cold dish, maybe a stew that you can prepare in advance, and don't do too many stir fries because that makes it more stressful at the last minute.
Mm-hmm. Just controlling the heat, right?
Exactly.
Which is
standing over the wok while everyone else is sitting down and eating.
There you go. And when you do stir fry, you have to be there to manage that heat, which is where it's all about in Sichuan cooking. Wow. What fun. Fuxia Dunlop, the author of The Food of Sichuan, the new and updated edition of the classic Land of Plenty. What a fun read. You must have had a lot of fun doing this. And we thank you for joining us today, Fuxia. And folks, remember Michael Olson's first law of the food chain today. Agriculture is a foundation upon which we build all our Sichuan dishes. Ha ha. Thank you all for tuning in. And thank you, Fuxia, for joining us. Really happy to have you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Michael.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.